Well, for planning that summer vacation, it's probably time to get the camera out of storage and start reviewing some of those basics. Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota, has taught photography at Western Tech College in La Crosse. He's in the Lifelong Learning Program. He's created a mixed media CD, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. He's written a lot of articles for places like Shutterbug and eDigital Photo and Imaging. So really pleased to have Jack back. And if you'd like to join in with a question or comment about digital photography, maybe you're looking at new cameras, maybe you're interested in something new or different, or maybe you've got a question about the camera that you now have, I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and email us at talk@wpr.org with a question as well. Jack, welcome.
Thank you for having me on.
I'm really pleased to have you back. Getting lots of questions these days from folks about digital cameras?
It's amazing. I teach some classes over at Western Technical College in La Crosse and do some one-on-one tutorials there, and we hear a lot of the same questions over and over again because more and more people are picking up digital cameras every day. I should note, however, that this week we mourn the passing of Kodachrome slide film.
Yeah.
First for 75 years. Do you realize that in a few years there'll be an entire generation of kids who have no idea what Paul Simon is singing about? What's he talking about? Bright colors. What is that? You can fix it with Photoshop. It doesn't matter.
Boy, that's really really true, isn't it? Man, yeah. It is kind of sad to see it go.
It is. It is. But you know, things are changing, and it's a different reality for taking pictures. The one thing I'm noticing, though, is that instead of the cameras getting less features to make them simpler, they keep adding them on. Just a couple of days ago, I had a person in there showing me their new camera. It was a 10-megapixel Sony. And as usual, you know, it's got the little so-called green decision-free setting.
Yeah.
And then it's got the letter P for program, which is the same kind of exposure, but you can do more things. But then below that, it had another setting that was called easy. And I'm looking at this, I'm going, wait, I thought the green was the easy one, right? What they've done is, when you put it on easy, there are even less choices than on the green setting. So it should be marked like really easy. And so they're obviously beginning to deal with the fact that their idea of easy is not the average person's idea of easy. So they better make something that's even easier. And so I'm hoping that this was going to catch on and that they'll just remove a lot of the features that nobody ever uses. There's a lot of folks who never will even find five different metering patterns on their digital camera, let alone actually use them.
You have posted a nice piece on your website before you shoot the big event.
Yeah, I put that up with your listeners in mind. It's something that is kind of a checklist, and I've got it up there at our website, acpress.com. You can read it online, and there's even a PDF that you can download and print out if you want to. Just go to my site, which is acpress.com. And you'll see three red buttons, and the middle one says Other AC Press Content, and that will take you to a series of articles. One of the tabs says Photography, and in that list of articles, the top one is this particular thing we're talking about today. It's just kind of a checklist of things you should really know about before some big event comes up, and especially if somebody else in the family has been playing with your camera.
Yes. Well, my wife was at a wedding last weekend, and she has a little Canon. It's just a little, and I don't remember the
probably a PowerShot or something like that.
Yeah, it's a thin one. It'll shoot digital movies.
Oh yeah,
and she shot a digital movie of the wedding, and I was amazed at how well it turned out.
Yeah, that's something that's become a real surprise. I was shooting a relative's 90th birthday last year, and people began telling stories about old Uncle Voito and how he used to dance the jitterbug during World War II. And I switched over to the movie mode and kind of did a cinema verite thing where I just left it on and ended up making a DVD of it, and it was really neat. I think what's going to happen, frankly, Larry, is that we're going to see a merging between movies and still cameras. And eventually, this whole idea of taking the single shot probably is going to go away. When the child's about to blow up the candle, you're probably going to start the video up, and it'll record it at such a high frame rate that you'll be able to freeze it and then pick the exact instant that you want to make a print from.
Yeah, we...
But wait 5 years.
We took some video, digital video of our daughter pulling out her first tooth. I've got that the other night, and boy, that's something that, you know, years ago you just wouldn't have that.
No, exactly. And I think that you're going to be seeing, well, look what's going on, you know, with all the things going on overseas, the videos being taken with phones. But the quality of the ones in built-in cameras, in still cameras, is pretty good. However, if you really are serious about doing video, the quality in a dedicated digital video camera is even better.
Yeah.
However, for those moments, the tooth moment or the birthday moment, you know, if you haven't got a video camera with you, boy, it's nice to be familiar with the little one built into your digital camera. One thing, though, I tell my students, I said, they record sound and the microphone is nearest to you. Be careful what you say.
Yes.
if you mutter something about the bridesmaids' dresses, it'll come through really clear.
Logan in Green Bay, we'll go to you. Hi, Logan.
Hi. I just have a couple questions. Sometimes when myself or others are taking pictures with a digital camera,
yes.
There's two problems. Sometimes there's red eye.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes there's motion blur. I was wondering if you could talk about that.
Two extremely common problems. And the simple fact, let's talk about the red eye first. Mm-hmm. Flash was never supposed to be that close to the lens of the camera because that's what causes red eye. The flash bounces off the eyeball of the person and back right into the lens of the camera. If you look at wedding photographers, they have a flash that's about 2.5-3 feet away from the actual camera they're using. Prevent red eye. And back in the days when we had little pocket Instamatic cameras with little flash cubes, that's when red eye got going because the flash was so close to the lens that it caused that problem. And Kodak actually had to give out these things called flash cube extenders that look like a salt shaker that you stuck the cube on top of that to get it away from the lens. So the solution is, quite frankly, when possible, try not to use flash. You will be amazed at how good a picture most digital cameras will take with relatively available light. So try turning off the flash and see if you get better results.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot.
As far as the blur part is concerned, that's another typical question. Once again, as I say in my class, the laws of physics have not changed just because you've dropped from film to digital. It takes a certain amount of light to have a fast enough shutter speed to freeze action or to prevent camera shake. And a lot of point-and-shoot cameras and a lot of basic SLR lenses are not that terribly fast, as they call it. They don't have large apertures that let in a lot of light. So you may have to adjust the ISO of your camera to make it a bit more sensitive to see if you can boost the shutter speed up a little bit.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Melanie in Stockbridge, your turn. Hi, Melanie.
Hi. I just purchased my first digital camera, and I'm looking to burn my pictures onto a disc at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering what's the best way to go about that or if there's a certain kind of CD to buy.
Well, do you have a PC or a Mac?
I have a Mac.
Okay. It doesn't really matter which one. As long as you go out and buy CDRs or DVDRs, generally speaking, with both systems, you can just simply drag those files onto the CD, and there should be some piece of software in your system that says, do you want to burn these to a disc? And that's about it.
Okay, I bought a DVD-R, I could do videos and pictures onto the same disc then?
You could put the actual files on there, but it wouldn't be something that you could put into a TV DVD and play necessarily. You may want to do a little organization before you start burning the discs, like putting the pictures in files that are properly titled so you know what they are. But you should have the software built in. I know with the Mac you do, and with most PCs you definitely do.
Okay, so really
all you got to do is buy the discs.
For pictures?
Yeah. Just buy the discs and take a look at your help files, and it should work pretty easy, frankly.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for calling. Melvin in Wisconsin Dells, we're on to you now. Hi.
Hi. I'd like to ask your guest whether, with the exception of camera collectors, Is there any place at all left for non-digital cameras?
Boy, I'll tell you, it is becoming almost something for enthusiasts. And that's a problem that we're going to be dealing with. I still think that for certain archival purposes, shooting black and white film is a really great idea. But it's going to become something, just as years ago, the people who shot 4x5 view camera stuff were enthusiasts. I think film people in general are going to be enthusiasts. There's still plenty of room for it. You can buy scanners that will scan slides and negatives and put them onto web pages and all that. And for fine art photography, it's still around. But sadly, it's fading quickly.
All right. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. An email from Eric, who has just ordered Canon EOS 5D Mark II. It has an ultrasonic sensor shaker that's supposed to throw dust off every time the camera is turned on. My current camera, the 5D, has terrible problems with dust. I do a lot of art reproduction, and the dust really shows up. What's your understanding of how well the dust-shaking feature of the new Canons works?
I haven't checked out the specific model, but they keep getting better and better. I mean, my original Digital Rebel doesn't have it at all, and so every once in a while I have to kind of blow it out. What they've done is they've shaken the sensor to shake off the dust, and they have some semi-permanent little sticky strips inside the camera that pick it up. But it is a problem. It is something that I don't think has been fully addressed by the camera industry. It's something they frankly didn't think much about until it began noticing it. And so a lot of people end up buying some relatively, not terribly expensive, but they buy some special kits that are designed to take a close look at the sensor and manually remove specks. If you're doing fine art reproduction and you find you still have problems, you may have to have it professionally cleaned periodically, at least until such time as they figure out what to do with the problem.
All right. Mary in Oshkosh wonders, what is white balance and why should I care?
Yeah, there's a thing on the button called AWB, and for us older former disc jockeys, we thought that was a group called the Average White Band. But it's actually something borrowed from video cameras. Different sources of light, neon lights, tungsten light bulbs, have different colors of light. And back in the days of film, for example, if you were shooting indoors with no flash, that light bulb would look kind of orange. And so you put a blue filter on front of the lens to compensate for it. The automatic white balance in your digital camera electronically tries to compensate and turn everything to looking more like balanced daylight.
And that's the way it works. We'll talk some more about that with Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota, as we talk digital cameras with Jack. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking the basics of digital camera use today with Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota. I'm Larry Mueller. Jack's taught photography at Western Technical College. He has created a mixed media CD, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. Go to his website, acpress.com, and you're going to learn a whole lot more about photography and some of the CD that he has and many other things as well. So really pleased to have him with us back by phone. Join in with a question at talk@wpr.org. Email us, talk@wpr.org, or call at 1-800-642-1234. And Jack, is there anything else you wanted to say about white balance in a camera?
Well, simply that that's one of those creative tools that some people will never, ever use. But if you learn to use it, just like the exposure compensation button, it can greatly expand the quality of your photos because you can literally tell the camera what kind of light you're taking the pictures under, and it will help a great deal. So that's one of those ones that you have to take it off the decision-free setting to find. But it's in your manual, and it's pretty easy to do, and you'll actually have little symbols showing a light bulb or fluorescent lights, things like that, and, you know, shade and all that. It can do quite a bit of improving, but if you never get around to it, just leave it on automatic, and the camera will do a pretty good job.
Mary and Harshaw, we're on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Well, I'm a first-time going to buy a digital camera.
Okay.
At least I think I am. We don't take a whole lot of pictures. And with these disposable cameras for 27 exposures, it takes us about 2 months to get the camera filled. So would it be best to buy a digital camera and just, you know, save?
Well, you know, what you can do, there are plenty of bargain-priced digital cameras out there. And I used to make a joke about don't ever buy any digital camera that's blister-packed on a shelf. But I got to tell you that there are a few out there now that are pretty good. You can buy an inexpensive digital camera for well under $100.
Okay.
And for your particular needs, I would tend to lean more towards a Kodak one because they are a little bit simpler to operate. And then you buy a little storage card, which will cost you, I just bought one, 2 gigabytes, which is a large quantity, for $6. You take the card out, take it over to your lab, they'll make prints for you.
Yeah.
You don't have to get too involved. Just because there are a lot of buttons that are on the camera doesn't mean you have to use every single one.
Right.
And as you go, just you know, pick up a little bit of the manual as you go, but basically just leave it on automatic. You'll get better results than you got from your disposable.
Yeah, okay. And that was my other question, which would be the best, you know, one to buy, you know.
Well, in your particular case, I do lean more towards Kodak because they have some of the easier menus to understand. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I would suggest, though, when you do get your prints made, you might ask them to, they call it burning a CD for a couple of dollars.
Right.
They'll put them on a disc for you. So 5 years from now, you can go ahead and maybe, you know, use them again.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you now.
Katie in Utica, we go to you now. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I have a question about a definition of the term gamma. I've seen gamma on some digital software editing things, and I've also seen it on a movie camera once.
Right. That's one of those terms that in my class I hesitate to even explain and just more or less try to show. It's different than brightness. And maybe one of our Photoshop listeners can call in and give us a really accurate view. But when I use it, and it's found in most image editing programs, that when you increase the gamma, it increases the overall base luminosity of the entire picture. And there's a subtle difference between that and increasing the brightness. But if you have an underexposed picture, frequently increasing the gamma, and this is normally done with a computer image editing, will actually raise the light values of the entire image. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. And you're right. I don't understand how that's different than brightness.
I've tried it, too. There's a very subtle difference, and as I say, maybe one of our Photoshop experts can call us up and give a better explanation, but it's easier to demonstrate than it is to explain.
Okay. Thanks, Katie.
Thank you.
Orna in Madison, your turn. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for the show. My question is about digital video cameras.
Yeah.
I use mine a lot, but I can't stand the software on the computer. I think it's like NeuroVision or something for editing. And I'm kind of a technophobe, and I just want something really simple and basic and intuitive. Do you know of any that you could recommend?
Well, are you using a PC or a Mac?
A PC.
Okay. I think that, if I'm not mistaken, Microsoft has a free one called Movie Maker.
Oh, yeah?
Which is really just drag and drop, and you throw titles on the ends, and you can trim off the edges that are no good, and you're done.
Oh, okay.
So I would go to Microsoft.com or just Google Microsoft Movie Maker. Believe it or not, it may actually be already part of your operating system and hiding someplace like in the accessory folder.
That could definitely be.
But search for Microsoft Movie Maker. That's okay. About the simplest one I've seen. I'm also a big advocate of what they call freeware. So look for freeware video editing and see if you can find something simple, too.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Doug in Bark River, Michigan. We just lost Doug. Sorry, let's go to Carrie in West Bend, I believe, is up next. Carrie, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question about upgrading to my first digital SLR. I have a small Sony point-and-shoot and a larger Canon, I don't know what it is, SI something or other, but I'm looking for that sharp focus and the fuzzy background. So any advice would be appreciated.
Okay. The difficulty with any digital camera at this stage of the game is that because the sensor is smaller, the entire optical path is smaller, it's more difficult to throw the background out of focus. It used to be just the opposite with film cameras. So what you might consider getting, and most cameras come with a standard slightly wide angle to slightly telephoto lens, And it actually is somewhat difficult to isolate the subject. One thing we I find more and more people buying, and it costs around $85, is a 50 millimeter 1.8 non-zoom lens. It was normally made for the film version of your camera. Because it opens up to 1.8, which is a large lens opening, it increases the chance of the background being out of focus. Are you planning on doing portraits, or are you planning on doing scenics, or what kind of stuff are you trying to do?
It's just amateur photography stuff, so yes to all of the above.
But you like to isolate the subject and have the background out of focus. Is that,
right.
Is that what you're saying? I would consider looking into one of those 50 millimeter 1.8s. It's an option to go along with the other lens that you get, because it is actually quite a situation where it's more difficult to throw the background out of focus because of the optics of digital cameras.
Okay. Hmm.
In fact, there's software out there designed to outline the main subject and throw the background artificially out of focus.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there one SLR that's better than another?
At this point, I would say no. There's an awful lot of good Canons out there. It depends on basically the feature set you're looking for. I personally do not buy the high-end and digital SLRs because I don't need the rapid fire. But a digital Rebel would be probably just fine for you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Let's turn to Kim in Algoma next. Kim, hi.
Hi. Is it possible to take a flash from a 35 millimeter camera and use it with a digital camera?
Do you mean put it physically on the camera like with an SLR, or just have it fire alongside?
Have it fire alongside.
Yes. There used to be these things that we called slave units. That you would plug into the separate flash, and then when the flash from the main camera fired, it would fire the other one. But now you have to buy ones that are specifically designed for digital use. So if you go to any full-service camera store, ask for a slave unit for the flash, and you should be able to find one. So when the flash fires from your main camera, it'll fire the flash from the other one. One thing you should definitely not ever try to do is take an old 35 millimeter, like a Vivitar 283 flash that was made in the 1970s, and put it on the hot shoe of a modern-day camera, because their circuits are different there, and you could cause some problems. But a slave unit would work.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Doug in Bark River, Michigan, back to you now. Hi, Doug.
I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
I had two quick questions. I had all my images burned on disks at Walgreens. I got a new computer, and I loaded them on there, and my 2,000 images on my new Dell computer showed up as 10,000. I had like three copies of each image. I was wondering if I did something wrong or if I should just...
No, I think what may have happened is that they scanned these. They probably saved them at different resolutions. A lot of times what these companies do is they put software on the CD or the DVD that allows you to look at the pictures, and they'll actually save them as thumbnails so they can be quickly seen, low-resolution images, and then the full image. So probably on the CD, if you look for a folder that says DCIM, for digital camera images, those are probably the full high-resolution versions of your pictures. But that would explain why there would be so many on there. I think they simply put several different versions on there for you.
Oh, so if I look on my images, then one is going to be a higher resolution, and then I can just get rid of all the rest and just keep
that would be correct. Yeah, when you right click on them on an individual file, look at the properties, and the ones that are the largest number of megs or K or whatever they are, those are the high resolution ones.
Okay, do you have time for one more quick one?
Sure.
You can try.
I have Element 7, and I have a digital Rebel XTI. And when I take my files that I think are going to, although I took them in color, think are going to look good in black and white, in the Element 7, as I work with them, they all end up just kind of turning out not very sharp black and white, kind of brownish gray, and... Do I have to get a different system or upload a different black and white?
I think you may find some Photoshop filters specifically for converting to black and white. I've also read that if you break, and I don't know if you knew this with Elements or not, but if you take the color photo and you make it into three separate RGB files and convert one of those to black and white, it may look better. The other thing is you may just want to tweak the levels and find the midpoint and play with those. But there are some specific plugins that will work with Photoshop Elements that will do a better job of converting them as opposed to just going mode black and white. Many of them are free. So get on the internet, do a little search for best plugins for converting black and white, and I bet you'll find something.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Email from Michael from DePere. Purchased a Canon PowerShot SX10IS digital camera. He and his partner are headed to Europe on a trip, and they're fairly new at the digital camera game, and the automatic default settings don't take particularly good pictures in low light, which presents a problem because in Europe they'll be visiting the cathedrals, basilicas, the low-lit museums, and they want to document what they see for their families. What are some strategies to figure out the best low-light settings for a camera?
In 30 seconds, I can't tell you. I can tell you, you might want to buy my CD.
Yeah.
What you basically have to do is you have to take it off fully automatic, go on to the program setting, and probably set it for a higher ISO than it's picking. That means it'll be a more sensitive sensor, and it'll pick a higher shutter speed that'll avoid shake, things like that. Also, you may want to go to what they call aperture priority and set it for the largest aperture, which will let more light in. So you're going to have to go off decision-free, and in order to learn how to do that, you either got to read the manual carefully or pick up somebody's guide to doing it. And, of course, I have to plug mine because I wrote it.
Yeah, and how do you – and how to talk a little bit more about your CD.
We produced a CD that is a lot of me talking along with visuals. It runs on PCs only at this time, I'm afraid, and it will give you the whole thing in a completely organized fashion. It's not expensive, and we mail it to you in a matter of a couple of days. Just go to our site, acpress.com. You'll see three red buttons on the front. One of them is a click to the order page. The other one of the articles, and a third button for some other audio stuff that we do. But it really will give you, it's the nearest thing to having me come over for a couple hours and explain to you where the buttons are and what they do.
There you have it. Let's go to Terry in Green Bay. Hi, Terry.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to ask Jack, in the future, I'm going to be purchasing a digital camera. I know nothing about them. I've never had one, and I know that one of our little camera stores in the area, they've got the Nikon Coolpix series. They've got a little sale on like an S610 is the model I was looking at. And if he can just comment, you know, in that price range, good camera.
Well, a lot depends on what you're trying to shoot. If it's got the typical modest zoom range from a little wide angle to a little telephoto, you know, it's good for a lot of average shots. If you're trying to shoot high telephoto sport shots of kids halfway across a football field, it's not going to work. If you're trying to do wildlife photography, it's not going to work. This has been a challenge we've had since the beginning of digital cameras. People are getting these, and they're excited about them, and they're trying to do a lot of stuff that they would never think of doing with their old 35-millimeter point-and-shoot. So what kind of stuff are you planning on taking?
Oh, just regular photos, you know, not really wildlife telephoto.
Yes, scenic, kids in the backyard, parties, and fun pictures. It'll be great. Be just fine for that kind of purpose. It's just like the old Clint Eastwood Dirty Harry thing. You got to know your limitations. and if you need to do high action, high speed sport shots, you have to buy a pretty pricey digital SLR and some really big lenses. But for the kind of pictures that most of us take, family snapshots, travel photos, maybe a nice portrait here and there, flowers, things like that, these cameras will do just a fine job.
Good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. Richard in Lake Tomahawk. Your turn. Hi, Richard.
Hi, enjoying the show. I want a recommendation on a camera that should have versatility and ease of use for a variety of people. Want to purchase one for an organization where it'll be passed around for different activities. And I heard you mention Kodak, and I was wondering if there's a particular Kodak model that you'd recommend that any age group could with a little facility use it and be versatile enough for a lot of just group shots and activities of the club.
Actually, and these codec models come out about every 2 weeks, so it's really hard to pin down just one of them. But there are several codecs that have, I won't say unusually, but they have really pretty good wider angle lenses. And Kodak seems to have gotten into that market pretty nicely, where they offer a little bit wider lens than some of the standard cameras do. And if you're doing group shots, that may come in extremely handy. I don't know how many groups you're doing, but you may want to take a look at there are so many new models out there. You can buy ones for $150 that are unbelievably easy to use. If you've got folks who are not familiar with cameras, leave it on the easy mode. Many of the newer models have really big screens on the back, which makes them really easy to use. But you do have to be careful that a person not familiar with the camera doesn't break the back screen. But I would suggest just going to a store with a couple of the people from the committee, showing them a couple of the cameras. You may want to lean towards the Kodaks in this case. And if you find one where they kind of pick it up and they automatically kind of know how to press the button on it, just grab that particular one.
Great advice. One small question is, I ran across a trove of old family 35 millimeter and would like to transfer that through scanning, but it's so rolled up and so tight. Is there some way that I can treat that film?
You got to be really careful with it, because you don't want the emulsion to come off, but you might be able to, what you might try to do is just for a short period of time, put them on some acid-free paper between paper and press them in a book and see what happens. Okay. Theoretically, you could, if they're black and white especially, you could put them in some liquid to soften them up a little bit, but I'm really worried about those emulsions flaking off.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Eileen in West Salem has a stash of negatives in her safety deposit box. If I lost all my photo albums due to some catastrophe, would these negatives be of any use? How do you suggest I have a backup photos for the last 30 years?
Okay, so you've got real physical negatives, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, you're doing the right thing. You've got them stored away someplace. They will last a good long time. And as long as you can see the image, there'll be a way of getting it back into print, whether it be scanned back in or put into an enlarger or rephotographed or whatever. As long as you've got a physical image, that's great. Safe deposit box is probably a good place to keep it, because those banks normally are not terribly humid, and they've usually got some temperature controls in there. So you're doing the right thing. Color will still shift no matter what happens, but nowadays we can rescan the negatives, and using various software tools, we can restore the color pretty nicely. So I think you're on the right track.
Quincy in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Quincy.
Hi. So I have a film SLR. It's a Canon Rebel 2000.
Okay.
And whenever I take pictures, it seems like there's a lot of noise in them. Like, sometimes there isn't as much, but there's always, you know, it's always noticeable. And I was wondering if there's any way with Photoshop or just with taking the pictures themselves, if I can reduce the amount of noise in them.
Okay, so you've got a digital Rebel or a film?
No, it's a film.
Okay.
It's film, but I always get them developed to photo CDs.
Sure, okay. Well, the first thing is, what speed of film are you using?
Well, usually I use 400.
Okay, that's not terribly grainy, so that should be okay. There are usually, in most most reasonable editing programs, there are noise reduction filters that could cut that down. I would be checking, though, to see, do you always get them done at the same place?
Yeah.
You might try a different place and see if you get different results. Maybe when they're scanning them, they've got some setting set that's causing some noise to be in there. Because with film, with 400 film, that's about as good as it gets these days. It's pretty good stuff. So I'd be looking and wondering if this, take a look at the negatives. Have a print made from the negative and see if it looks as bad, because I'm just suspecting that there's something in the scan process that's causing some problems there.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, you're shooting film. It shouldn't be grainy. But there is noise reduction available in most editing programs, both the free ones and the non-free ones.
And thank you for calling. What about, somebody asked about batteries. How good are batteries these days?
Batteries are good, but they only go for a couple of years before they get weak. So you always want to Number one, you always want to have a spare battery, because if your camera takes a proprietary battery and it goes dead on you, you're done shooting for the day.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you don't want to buy six of them, because they'll age whether or not they're being used. So, you know, have a spare battery with you. Make sure they're, before any big event, always make sure your batteries are fully charged. And again, grab that little article I put up on the website. It's a, kind of a checklist of things you really should check before the important event goes out.
That's a good article, and that's found at acpress.com. Go to that website. Jack, thank you so much.
All right, we'll talk to you again.
Sure hope so. Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota, has taught photography at Western Technical College in La Crosse in the Lifelong Learning Program, and that mixed media CD is How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. And you can take a look at that and his articles, if you'd like, at acpress.com. Always fun to have him with us. We always get lots of calls. And thanks to everybody who's called and emailed. I'm sorry we didn't get to everyone. Garden Talk coming up tomorrow. Ed Lyon, Executive Director of the Allen Centennial Gardens, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us. Lots in store.